Lord, I ask that you would, really bring this stuff alive tonight for us. And so I pray that I would do the honors of introducing your spirit into this particular Bible study. And I ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Before I read this tonight, I want you to think about your life. This is life application Bible study here tonight. If what person in your life, or maybe people, if they were to walk into this sanctuary and sit right near you, would make your guts gurgle? I mean, you know, just and raise your blood pressure to a point where you're about to blow the sockets. I want you to think about those people. In fact, I watched this program called The Blacklist, and I don't know if anybody else hears it, but everybody's got a blacklist. And these are your public enemies numbers, and if you want to, write a couple of them down, so that you call them to mind. And if that doesn't do it, I'm hoping I will call this stuff to mind tonight. The blacklist. Remember, this is entitled Dealing with Sin Through Love's Eyes, or you can, when the chickens come home to roost. Either one you can use for this one. This is about sin. This is about love and the passage of time. And what we do with people in our lives who are, well, if they were to walk in here, would really cause you a lot of grief. I'm going to read the 28 verses of chapter 42. Now, this is after Joseph's been in prison. This is after the 7 years of really good stuff that take place down there with him as prime minister of Egypt. And it's in the someplace in the middle of, or maybe the latter part of famine, the 7 years of famine. So I want you to just consider that. When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, this is not Joseph, this is Jacob, this is his father, back up there with all the other boys. When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" Take it out of stained glass. And he's sitting around the table, and they're all worrying about famine and all this, and they're not got enough. And he says, "What the heck are you boys doing? Looking at each other like that? I want you to do something about this." That's what he's doing. "Why do you look at one another?" And he said, "Behold, I've heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there that we may live and not die." In other words, they had money. They didn't have food. So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt, but Jacob did not send Benjamin. Now, if you've been in this study for a while, you know why. That he fears for Benjamin's life, probably. "Send Benjamin, Joseph's brothers, with his brothers, for he feared that harm might befall him." And we're not talking trouble on the way down there. We're talking about trouble from the boys, the other boys. "Thus the sons of Israel came to buy among the others who came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land. He it was who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. Joseph saw his brothers and knew them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them. 'Where do you come from?' he said. They said, 'From the land of Canaan to buy food.' Thus Joseph knew his brothers, but they did not know him. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed of them, and he said to them, 'You are spies. You have come to seek the weakness of the land.' And they said to him, 'No, my lord, but to buy food have your servants come.'" That sounds like something Yoda would say. "To buy food have your servants come." Just what I said. Anyway, I'm sorry. I slide off the edges every so often. "We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants are not spies." And he said to them, no, it is the weakness of the land that you have come to see. And they said, we, your servants, are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is no more. That's Joseph, by the way. But Joseph said to them, it is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you and let him bring your brother, which you, while you remain in prison, that your words may be tested whether there is truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies. And he put them all together in prison for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to them, do this and you will live, for I fear God. And it's important that he see some of these things. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers remain confined in your prison, and let the rest go and carry grain for the famine of your households. And bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified, and you shall not die. And they did so. Then they said to one another, in truth, we are guilty concerning our brother in that we saw the distress of his soul when he besought us, and we would not listen. Therefore, in this distress is this distress come upon us. And Reuben answered them, did I not tell you not to sin against the lad? But you would not listen. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood. They did not know that Joseph understood them, for there was an interpreter between them. Then he turned away from them and wept, and he returned to them and spoke to them. And he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. And Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to replace every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. This was done for them. Then they loaded their asses with their grain and departed. And as one of them opened his sack to give his ass provender at the lodging place, he saw his money in the mouth of his sack. And he said to his brothers, my money has been put back. Here it is in the mouth of my sack. At this, their hearts failed them, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, what is this that God has done to us? Now, I'll bring it up to you again. Who's on your blacklist? Public enemy number one to you. If that person were to come in here, and it would be, what would it do to you in terms of how that worked? In the passing of time, in your life, do you hold grudges? Or do you let it go by the work of the Holy Spirit in you? Make a list. I mean, if you really think about this, because this kind of stuff gets real right here. One time down in Kentucky, and I may have told this, at some of you may have heard this story before. I was one of the elders of the church I was at down in Kentucky. I put him in a very bad position. I didn't do it intentionally. I did it accidentally, but I did, buddy. And he called me into his office. Now, this guy was a real king. He was a man of money and everything. So he's somebody you pay attention to. He called me into his office downtown. And as I walked into his office, he said, look at that picture on the wall. And it was a painting of an Indian dressed in war paint and garb, and he was up on the top of a hill, and he was looking down into a valley, and it was snow-covered, and down in the valley was a covered wagon with a bunch of people moving along on the pathway down there. And it was obvious that this was a war-painted Indian ready to attack. And those people down there in the valley had no idea that they were the subject of his attention. And that Indian had a choice to make. Do I let him go through the valley? or do I put them to death? And it was obvious in the picture that what it was doing is the picture was trying to raise up this idea. What if this Indian had a choice whether to let that person go or that group go or not? And this guy said to me, he said, "You put me in a really bad place. And I'm like that Indian up on the hill right now with you." Now, I had done it unintentionally, but I had put him onto a committee with another elder that they were at war with in the church, basically. They're both lawyers. And I don't know how I had the presence of mind to do this, but because it was, I mean, he was making a strong point, and he meant it. I said, "Yeah, I can appreciate the understanding of what that picture is, but what we don't know is who took the picture. We don't know who's behind the Indian." And I don't know how I had the guts to do that to him, but I did. And he said, "I'm going to let you go in this." And I didn't mean to do it, but I understand. Now, I want you to think about that picture. I have looked everywhere to try to find that because I would like a copy of that painting. What will you do if that person came in here and he really or she really was sat almost right next to you? What would it do to you on the inside? This is what this Bible study is really all about. And I've said this before, the way that you see the world is not the way the world is, it's the way you are. And the way you judge other people is the judgment that comes back on you. Well, if I think about people in my life, now I've lived long enough to have a few enemies out there or people that I have perceived as enemies over the time. It all depends, doesn't it? Kind of. I want you to look at Joseph in this story. I mean, this ought to come to real life. His story is that his brothers were going to kill him, but they sold him into slavery instead. He spent 13 years as a slave and in prison before he was raised up in Egypt to become the prime minister of Egypt. He went down there as a slave. He didn't know the language. He didn't know the culture. He had to deal with his own deprivations in terms of that and maybe loneliness. He was in prison. He was a slave. And then he was dealt with false accusations by Potiphar's wife, and he went through all that. And how would you feel towards your brothers if this had happened to you? Now, 20 years have passed, basically. At least 20. Probably closer to 25. Joseph is down there in Egypt. He went through all that affliction and pain and suffering. And here it is, and they're in the middle of that famine, and his brothers show up from Canaan. Will you feed them? What would you do with these guys? Remember the Indian up on the hill. He's got a choice. He's got the high ground here. I mean, he's really got the high ground. Now we're going to walk through this. Chapter 42, verses 1 to 4. When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" I can just see that sitting around the table. What's wrong with you boys anyway? And he said, "Behold, I've heard that there's grain in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there that we may live and not die." So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt, but Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with his brothers, for he feared that harm might befall him. Thus the sons of Israel came to buy among the others who came, for the famine was in the land. Now, Joseph sends the 10 brothers that they're going to. They know nothing of Joseph's world. They know nothing of Joseph. And when they're getting ready and they're going down there, they know their assignment. Dad has said, go down there and buy food for us so that we don't starve up here. They come into his presence. Now think about this, and I'll keep bringing this. Life is a matter of attitude, but in this case, think about the horizontal and the vertical relationship in terms of God's work in your life and the horizontal way we look at the world in terms of people around us. And they're going down there. These are a bunch of hungry nomads, basically. They're probably bearded and everything, and they don't speak the language of Egypt. They speak Hebrew. And they're coming down there in the midst of this. The sons of Israel came to buy among the other things who came for the famine. Now, one other thing about this is this whole thing about Benjamin being kept from going down there. Benjamin, by this time, is in his early 20s, okay? But I suspect that Jacob has a suspicion about what happened to Joseph from those other 10 boys and what they may have done to him. Not only that, but you got to remember the whole family unit here is there are 10 boys, actually 11 boys by four different women. Rachel and Leah are the two sisters, and they were at each other's odds anyway in terms of life. And there's probably that. Then you got the two maidservants and all their kids. And here's what you have is you have power politics right in the middle of that family. And people are not friendly with one another. And these are BC people as far as I'm concerned. Jacob is the only one in that family and Joseph, but Joseph's not there, who are connected to God any kind of real relationship. And there's all kinds of jealousy, envy, and all this stuff. And I know that Jacob says, I'm not sending Benjamin with it because I've got a sneaking suspicion that's what happened to Joseph in reality. But I can't prove it. I don't think he's an idiot. Jacob never was an idiot. And so in this midst of this, he says, you boys, you 10 boys go down there. All Leah's kids and Bilhah and Zilpah or whatever the other's name is. But Rachel's kid, I'm keeping here. Okay? So keep it. And this is the story of the redemption of humanity. This is where Jesus comes from. He's coming out of this whole understanding of God's people. And they're all God's people, but they're sinners as well. Now Joseph was governor over the land. He it was who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their face to the ground. Joseph saw his brothers and knew them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them. Where do you come from? He said. They said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. Few things here. They didn't recognize him. Did he disguise himself? I don't think that was probably necessary. One of the things is they're coming down there and they're rough, nomadic-looking guys with beards and all kinds of stuff. You've seen all the stuff on the walls of some of the Egyptian stuff. They're all clean-shaven. So he was probably all cleaned up. This is 20 to 25 years later, too. So you got a man that they haven't seen for all that time. So he's clean shaven. He spoke harshly to them. He's Egyptian in his garb and his language. He is not speaking Hebrew. He is speaking Egyptian to them. Now, I want you to think about it from the standpoint of Joseph, and these guys show up. Have you ever been blindsided by that person showing up in your life that you've got really, really bad feelings towards, and they just showed up suddenly? Oh, I've had that happen numerous times in varying levels of that degree of stuff. You know, over the years, both down in Kentucky and here, I have been the good guy and I have been the bad guy, even though most of the time I'm just the guy. And when we moved over here from Woodland Chapel, 75 people left that church, and guess who was the bad guy? Well, I still have opportunity to run into some of those people on occasion, several times at funerals. And let me tell you something, it does something to you on the inside. So all you have to do is think about that person. Here is Joseph, and he gets blindsided by the people who tried to kill him and then actually sold him into slavery and was the reason for all the affliction that he had for those 13 years. How do you think he felt? I don't think this is a good thing for Joseph's internal engine at this point in time. I mean, I don't think he's glad to see his brothers. Anyway, he speaks Egyptian. He's dressed in an Egyptian garb. They aren't looking for him because as far as they're concerned, he's probably a slave someplace if he's even still alive. And when you don't expect to see someone, you actually can't see them sometimes. You know, when Jesus was crucified and rose from the dead in Luke chapter 24 in the walk to Emmaus, these guys are walking to that small town, and Jesus walks with them, and they don't recognize him. Well, why not? Well, for one thing, he might look a little bit better in a resurrected body than he did hanging on the cross. But the other thing is, as far as they knew, he was dead. And I don't expect to see him. And so one of the things is we can get literally blindsided because we don't see people. Or we don't see things because we're not expecting to see them. This is actually a paradigm study. If you do anything on paradigms, you can find that we can't see outside our box a lot of times. And that's what's going on here. These boys, they're not boys, they're men. They're at least 45 and 50 years old, some of them. But they weren't expecting to see Joseph, so they didn't see him. All they saw was an Egyptian who was in charge here. Verse 8. Thus Joseph knew his brothers, but they did not know him. Now, I want you to think about Joseph. I mean, first off, he gets blindsided. I'm sure this just probably gurgled his insides. And he's going, wow, this is where you dust off your memories. And you open that book and, oh, my God. And it comes back to you, whatever it was. Now, I'm going to tell you something about every one of us here. Nobody lives your life like you do. Now, I don't know what you think about, but every one of us lives in our own little universe or world. I don't care how married you are or how long you've lived with somebody, that it's still true. You have your own world, your own universe. Now, here's what happens with Joseph. Joseph knew his brothers, they didn't know, and Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed of them, And he said to them, you are spies. You've come to see the weakness of the land. Now, notice what he remembers. Deja vu, man. He remembers the dreams. Now, if you've been here in that study, you will remember that he told his brothers, he said, and his father, he says, I had this dream, and you guys were kind of like grain, and you bowed down to me, and then I had another dream, and by the way, that's that second confirmation, where you're the stars, and you're bowing down to me in terms of this. And he remembered his dreams. And remember, he has his own world, just like you do. Every one of us has our unique. God talks to each of us uniquely. And you can write that down and take that one to the bank. God talks to each of us uniquely. And he had dreams. Now, even if he tells his dreams to everybody, all his brothers and everything, it's not the same. He's the one who had the dreams. Now, I've told you a few of you about the dreams that I've had, actually visions that I've had, and I had one back in 1979, and I saw this basic sanctuary here from up high, and I saw hundreds of candles in it. And that was back in 1979. Now, I can tell you about that, but until when I walked in here and I saw that, from up high, that's how God talks to me. And that was unique for me. And I could tell you about it, but you didn't experience that. And it's kind of like God can talk to you, and you can have your experience with God, and you can tell me about it, but it's unique to you. And Joseph right here, and it says it right in Scripture, he remembered the dreams that he had when he was 17 years old, and he told his brothers, and that's what was part of the reason where their envy and jealousy and hatred came from, was the fact that, who's this kid think he is? The other thing about this is, dreams are very particular to Joseph. That's how God talks to him. He talked to him when he was a kid, and he told his brothers about it and his dad about it, and they just kind of blew it off, or about ready to blow him away. And then he talks to him in dreams again, but it's not his dreams. It's the butcher and the butler's dreams. And that's how God is working with him. And he sees these brothers, and he knows there's 10 of them there, but he knows that he has another brother in terms of this. You are spies. You have come to see the weakness of the land. This is verse 9. They said to him, no, my lord, but to buy food your servants have come. Have your servants come. That's the Yoda verse. You can make note of that. Verse 10. That's the Yoda verse. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants are not spies. He said to them, no, it is the weakness of the land that you has come. Notice that Joseph does not reveal to them who he is. Why do you think he does that? Well, for one thing, I think he's trying to do is buy time. And one of the principles of leadership that I learned a long time ago, but this is a principle of life. We have such a tendency to knee-jerk react to things that happen to us quickly. And I learned this actually about 40 years ago when I was down in East Tennessee, and I watched the head pastor down there. And one of the things that he was really good at was he never knee-jerk react to things. He would always put a little bit of space between whatever was happening and that, and then he would respond to it. Now, you can't always get that done because things can hit us right hard and fast, but I learned the principle then, and I try to practice this. When I have somebody hit me with something or blindside me with something, I try not to react. I try to give a... just put some space between it and then respond. And I've had people who have, attacked me for that matter. And I don't try to react to that. I try to, first off, let that settle so I can, if I'm going to do anything with it, I'm going to respond to it. And I've learned this. Now, you can't always get it done, but this is one of the things that I believe that Joseph, he is the leader of a land, but he has been a leader all his life in a lot of ways. And what he's doing is, I got to have a little bit of space here because this wouldn't really hit rock me. My brother's showing up here, and I have, and all those memories are coming up and bad feelings. So he makes this accusation to them, "You're spies." And he's talking about that, and he's doing that with them. And I really believe that part of the reason that he does that is to get a little space so he has a little bit of time to deal with this. Verses 12 and 13, he said to them, "No, it is the weakness of the land that you have come to see." And they said, "We, your servants, are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is no more." Now, put yourself in Joseph's sandals at this point in time, you might say. There's 12 in all. The youngest is still with dad. And one is dead. And he is getting all, the book is opening up. The memories are coming back to him in terms of this. Think about the webs of a tree here. The boys and their mothers and all the ghosts with that. And he's just kind of backing up from that. Now, he hasn't seen Benjamin, so we need to make sure that it's the truth. You're the leader of the land, okay? You're in charge. You're the Indian on the hill. You're the one that's up higher than other people in terms of this stuff. But Joseph said to them, "It is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you and let him bring your brother while you remain in prison, that your words may be tested. Whether there is truth in you or else, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." And he put them all together in prison for 3 days. Now, send one, and the rest of you are going to jail. Notice here, this is one of the things most all of you understand. There is something about 3 days. What happens in those 3 days? These guys are 3 days in prison. Joseph gets a chance to rethink things here a little bit in terms of this. And there's some soul searching that's going to go on during those 3 days, because when you spend 3 days in this kind of situation, things happen on the inside of you, and he puts them away for 3 days. A little bit of soul searching taking place here. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers remain confined in prison, and let the rest go and carry grain for the famine of your households. And bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified and you shall not die." And they did so. Then they said to one another, "In truth, we are guilty concerning our brother in that we saw the distress of his soul when he besought us, and we would not listen. Therefore is this distress come upon us." And Reuben answered them, "Did I not tell you not to sin against the lad? But you would not listen. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood." 3 days in prison. They do some real soul searching here in terms of this. Now, You have to have a conscience in order to do soul searching. I'm assuming that we here have some kind of a conscience. And what is it? Joe is up on high ground here. And Joseph can think, with them down in prison, and what am I going to do with my brothers at this point? Think about that person on your blacklist. What would you do if you got the high ground? If you're the Indian on the hill. They did not know that Joseph, this is verse 23, understood them, for there was an interpreter between them. He's paying attention. By the way, this is always good. Pay attention. They didn't know he understood them. You know, and we do things, I tell you what, one of the things that I know about God is he's a God of details, and he pays attention to what we do and say. And if you think you can get away with it, you are mistaken. And they talk about this. What is happening here is this is coming back on us right now. We are being judged because of what? In truth, we are guilty concerning our brother in that we saw the distress of his soul. In other words, he must have really cried out to them in terms of when they were trying to kill him, put him in the pit, and then they sold him into slavery. When he besought us, we would not listen. Therefore, is this distress come upon us? One of the things that I know in this particular case, we can say yes, at least partially, the reason that they're in the position that they're in right now is because of what they actually did. And this is the breakdown of burned consciences here. This is guilt coming through right now. This is personal admission by these guys to one another. They're talking about this during that 3 days in terms of what they did to their brother. I believe in a God of grace, but I also know this about God, and we don't hear this enough in church. God is a God of grace, but he is also the God of order, and he will balance things in the ledger in our lives. And what has happened to these guys is the distress that what happened to Joseph is being transferred to these 10 brothers right here. They are haunted by this. At this point in time, and this is some 20 years or so later, they are haunted by the death of their brother, or the brother being sold into slavery, and as far as they're concerned, he's probably dead. They did not know that Joseph understood. In verse 22, and Reuben answered them, "Did I not tell you not to sin against the lad? But you would not listen." So now there comes a reckoning for his blood. In verse 21, it says, "When in truth we are guilty concerning our brother, and we saw the distress of his soul," mark the word distress, "when he besought us, we would not listen. Therefore is this distress come upon us." Now, distress, the Hebrew word here, is also, it means to bind, to restrict, to cramp, to tie up. And in other words, when you're in distress, you're in jail. You're in a restricted situation. You are bound up because of circumstance. You are cramped because of what you have to deal with in terms of your life. You can be tied up in terms of a situation. And that's what this word means, distress, where he is all about. Joseph was in that kind of bound up situation. And they said, that's why we are now in this prison kind of atmosphere here. And I want to tell you another thing that I really believe, and we don't hear it enough. God is a God of vengeance. He, when it says in the Bible, vengeance is mine, I shall repay, you can bet on it. He said it. He meant it. And he is a God who balances the ledgers in life. Good reason not to treat anybody poorly. And what is happening here is the ledger is being balanced around these boys right now in terms of this. They are haunted by what they did. And now they are in distress because of what they did. Verse 24. It says, then he turned away from them and wept, and he returned to them and spoke to them. He had to get away from them, and he wept. Now, I also think about when he wept, what kinds of emotions were going through Joseph? Was he so torn up on the inside because of what they did to him? And this weeping is actually the agony of his memories that have come back to him? Or is it the fact that his brothers have actually showed up in his life again and suddenly he has relationships again that he didn't know he had anymore? Or is it because of the entire situation that is there, and there's a possibility of his brother Benjamin still being alive, but he doesn't know for sure. I mean, I believe there's all kinds of emotions that come up in Joseph at this point in time. He turned away from them and wept. Now, he had to get away from them. Once again, don't react, respond. He gave him himself enough time. And he returned to them and spoke to them. He took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. Now, when he binds Simeon, this is a physical picture that we're seeing right here, but this is also a spiritual reality. What he's doing is he is binding Simeon up, and they all get to watch it happen. The same way that they did to Joseph. And there, because of the restriction that is being placed upon Simeon and the fact that he is in a life-threatening situation as far as they are concerned, they are also re-experiencing what happened in terms of Joseph. So there's an emotional binding that is taking place at the same time that this is happening. They have done wrong with their life, and they have not had that resolved in their life. And here it happens, and they are really, really being torn up and bound up on the inside, all of them. We can be like this. I mean, if you have a conscience, things can happen around us where we are so emotionally bound up in them, literally bound, that it just drives us crazy. I don't know if you are a literature person, but I have been. In Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart, if any of you have ever read it, where the guy puts him in the wall, but he keeps hearing the guy's heartbeat, and it's really his own heartbeat in terms of that, but it's his own conscience that's coming out in terms of this, and the distress and the guilt of doing it. These guys are experiencing this, basically that telltale heart problem. And time doesn't erase it. And this is a principle, and I've heard it so many times that I just want, it makes me a little bit ill when I hear it. Time does not heal all things. You need to understand that truth. It can heal things, but it doesn't heal all things because there are reminders that happen into us. You know, think about that person on your blacklist. If they were to walk in here, what does it do? It opens all the book of memories and dusts it off, and here it comes, and it's right in your face again. Time does not heal all things. There are reminders that we all have. And the water under the bridge doesn't flush everything out. Some stuff stays with us. You know, I'm doing this series on Sunday morning on forgiveness, and it's really kind of odd in reality because I didn't plan it this way, that these particular studies in Joseph are coinciding with that series, but they are all related. And time doesn't heal all things. Some things stay with us. We can't get away from it. They feel it. These boys feel this stuff. That Joseph, they threw him in the pit. They were going to kill the kid. And they've had to deal with dad all these years and lied to him. And not only that, but so does Joseph. He feels all that, comes right back at him. In fact, all you have to do is look at what we looked at this. The two sons that he had, Joseph had. Manasseh was the first son. God has taken away the pain. Well, that means there was pain. That means the affliction was really there. And the second son is Ephraim, and this is the one who, I am fruitful in the land of my affliction. And that tells you that it never, Joseph wasn't just a good old boy down in the prison or working for Potiphar or any of that stuff. He was a good kid, but it hurt him too. It hurt him. It cut him deep. So here they have this thing coming together right there. And he's in charge. Remember the Indian on the hill. Sometimes we get to make the choice. Joseph saw that they were breaking. They spent 3 days in the dungeon. And he had been there, we don't know how long he was there. We know it was 2 years after the butler got out. But we don't know how long he was in that prison before that. And they spend 3 days down there, and they are coming apart, literally. Now, one of the things, Joseph's human, okay? He's just like you and me in terms of all that goes with it. He knew what prison can do to you. When you are restricted, when you are subject to the whim of others, when you have no control over your life situation, that's prison. And not all prisons have bars either. He knew what it can do to you, and he was watching his brothers, and it was working on them because they'd never done any time before. And he'd been there for years, and he knew. Now, one of the things that I ask myself, did Joseph feel any satisfaction in this? I think he probably did. You know, there's a part of me say, I'm glad to see him squirming. I'm glad to see what they're getting a little. Because, once again, if you're in the position of authority and you got the power, and you've got your enemy at your feet, what are you going to do? That may be the key to this whole passage here. Life is a matter of attitude. If you've got that person where you want them, so to speak, what are you going to do? I am sure that Joseph was at least tempted to really deal with them. let's slam them in the jail, in prison, and leave them there for 10 years. Right next to Potiphar's wife. You know, but he knew what it could do to you. I mean, when you're restricted and you are subject to the whim of other people and you have no control over the situation. Now, I'm going to come back to this about in terms of what God deals with us. He does like to balance the leisures on us. I don't care who you are. Everybody needs to know that truth. Because, you know, if you do somebody dirty in your life, now we always think about the ones that do us dirty, but have you ever done somebody dirty? Either intentionally or unintentionally. Maybe that's what part of this study is about, God tapping you on the shoulder and saying, you remember what you did? That's what God is doing with these guys. He's tapping them on the shoulder and saying, hey, I don't pay every day, but bills come due. And it may be 20-some years, but it's coming due right now. And they said, we're guilty as charged. But they don't even know that Joseph knows what they're saying. Now, how do we, one of the things we can surmise or get from, Joseph has literally already forgiven them. Because forgiveness is different than losing all the memories and all the pain. We know that he's forgiven because the sting is gone from him, because his firstborn son was Manasseh. And that's basically, God has taken the pain of all my affliction away from me already. The sting is gone. So the forgiveness is already there, you might say. The sting is gone. I want to say, being a pastor of a church or any church, and I've done it two or three times here, pastors die the death of 1,000 cuts. That's how they usually get cut. But occasionally, you take a bullet. And I've had a few over the years. And I have two letters up here. I'm not going to read them to you. See, I keep some letters. The ones where you write me about, thanks, Jack, for what you do, that's one thing. But I also keep the hate letters. I started keeping a file back about 35 years ago, a file on hate letters that I get. And I've come to realize that I can remember these people, but I can also forgive these people if God helps me do it. People that have hurt me over the years. Now, I may be a nice guy. I may be as nice as Joseph is. But I understand the pain of affliction as well. And I am not made of wood, even though some people think I'm Pinocchio. One of the things that I notice about Joseph here, he chose to covenant with God over all of this. Now, the real test for you and me in the midst of all this, and Joseph, the picture here in the 42nd chapter is really a good picture for all of us in terms of this. Joseph covenants with God. Now, the real test of dealing with people or peoples that have really hurt us in our life, the first test is this: when you actually come into their presence or they come into your presence, what does it do to you? That's why I will back up and I'll say this stuff. So if that person were to walk into here. The second test is if you have high ground over them. What are you going to do? When do you have high ground over people? Well, I have seen spouses have high ground over their spouse, and I have seen what they can do to them, and it is not pretty. And they've got a lot of things built up over the years, and suddenly they have the high ground. And let me tell you, I've seen wives especially will do this. They'll take them to the cleaners. And I mean, sometimes it's pretty ugly. I have seen siblings do that to one another. And I have seen children do that to their parents because the parents have hurt them so badly over the years that, man, when they get old and in there, then they deal with them. And it's not just taking care of somebody when they're in their latter years. I've seen them take them down. And it's pretty ugly. So the second test is always, what are you going to do if you do have the high ground? How are you going to do it? What are you going to do in that situation? Remember the picture of the Indian on the hill. Joseph has a covenant with God. Show good in place of evil. Show good in place of evil. That's hard to do sometimes because we are so human. Now, he doesn't reveal himself at this point in time. But what we're going to see here is he already is, actually. But for his family, he becomes an agent of God for repentance and restoration. So Joseph, we're in a fluid situation here. He says, okay, I've had you guys in jail for 3 days, and he's seen them breaking down, basically, in the midst of that, doing time. And he says, okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to take Simeon, and I'm going to tie him up. And he does it right in front of them, and I'm going to send the rest of you home to bring back Benjamin or bring back the youngest. Verses 25, and Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to replace every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. This was done for them. Now, what he's doing here, he is the leader. You got to understand that he is the leader of a country, and he has been refined by God through the prison experience and all that, and he is probably a pretty good student of people at this point in time. And he becomes an agent of God for them. He gives them grain, and then he takes the money that they were going to pay for that, and he repays evil with good. That's the first thing that he does. He shows them grace. But he is also keeping them in distress, which is bound up in the midst of this stuff. Then they loaded their asses with their grain and departed, and one of them opened his sack to give his ass provender at the lodging place. He saw his money in the mouth of the sack, and he said to his brothers, my money has been put back. Here it is in the mouth of the sack. At this, their hearts failed them, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, what is this that God has done to us? Now, this word trembling is important here. It actually occurs in 1 Samuel chapter 14 when it describes how Isaac responded or reacted to the fact that Jacob had stolen the heritage, the birthright of Esau, and he trembled. The same word is used in Genesis chapter 27 when it describes an earthquake and the land trembles. Their hearts sank. What is Joseph doing? I think he is repaying evil with good, but it's kind of like that thing Paul says, do good to your enemies because you'll heap coals upon them. What he has done is he's heaped coals upon them at this point in time. They didn't know it was Joseph. They probably thought, this Egyptian guy, he's just playing with us. Their hearts sank. They shook. They trembled. These cries, we've been set up. When Isaac found that Jacob had deceived him, that's when he trembled. So here they are. What can we learn from this? Now, think about this. Your blacklist, okay? The enemy of your life. And that person here, what can we learn? First off, the first thing is, in what way have you done something to someone else? I think that's the one thing that we forget about here. Is that we can do other people dirty just because of our own self-centeredness and self-interest. I'm kind of a student of humanity, and I'm also a student of my own life. And I have seen places where I have done things to people inadvertently or intentionally, it doesn't matter. But I've also seen how God has turned that around on me. And buddy, when he turns it around, the judgment is always right on. So put yourself in the place of someone that you have maybe done something to. Sometimes you have to think about that some. And when you do that, you begin to think about that and things begin to crack in you. If you got any kind of conscience, if you're God's man or woman in this world, this stuff will, in fact, work on you in terms of that. That's the first thing. The second thing is, what are you going to do if you get them in your presence? Now, we're going to move on from here next week. And we're going to move this thing. They are experiencing serious distress. So let's pray and we'll quit this evening. Lord, I ask that you would, in fact, talk to each of us concerning the people in our lives, both good and bad. In Jesus' name, amen.